The woes in the New Testament are a lot different than the ones in the Old Testament. Blessed are you who are poor. Blessed are you who are hungry and weeping. You know, this is a lot of the times when I'm preparing a homily, what I'll do is listen to Brant Petrie on YouTube. I've talked a lot about him, and he's an excellent biblical scholar. And one of the things that with this gospel that he mentioned was how strikingly different the Old Testament reads from this. And the Deuteronomy chapter 28. So I'll just read this from Deuteronomy chapter 28. This is what God says. If you fully obey the Lord your God and carefully follow all his commands I give you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all the nations on earth. All these blessings will come down on you and accompany you if you obey the Lord your God. You will be blessed in the city and blessed in the country. The fruit of your womb will be blessed and the crops of your land and the young of your livestock, the calves of your herds and the lambs of your flocks. Your basket and your kneading trough will be blessed. You will be blessed when you come in and blessed when you go out. The Lord will grant that the enemies who rise up against you will be defeated before you. They will come at you from one direction, but flee from you in seven. The Lord will send a blessing on your barns and on everything that you do. The Lord your God will bless you in the land he is giving you. And it goes on and on and on. It's a lot of earthly blessings, okay? Here are the curses. However, if you do not obey the Lord your God and do not carefully follow all his commands and decrees I am giving you today, all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. You will be cursed in the city and cursed in the country. Your basket and your kneading trough will be cursed. The fruit of your womb, the crops of your land, the calves of your herds and the lambs of your flocks. You will be cursed when you come in and cursed when you go out. The Lord will send on you curses, confusion, and rebuke in everything that you put your hand to. And it goes on and on. And what I noticed was, you know, that there's this temporal reward for obedience that is there promised in Deuteronomy. You know, your enemies are going to come at you in one direction. They're going to flee from you in seven directions. Now contrast that with the martyrs. There's a different thing happening there, isn't there? I don't claim to understand the whole entirety of that, but what does Jesus say? Blessed are you who are poor, for the kingdom of God is yours. Blessed are you who are now hungry, for you will be satisfied. Blessed are you who are weeping, you will laugh. Blessed are you when people hate you and when they exclude and insult you and denounce your name as evil on account of the Son of Man. So blessed are you when people are cursing you out for the sake of Jesus. Like Jesus, he's turning everything upside down from what we thought we knew in Deuteronomy. What he says is when everyone's, you know, when people denounce you and insult you and denounce your name as evil on account of the Son of Man, rejoice and leap for joy on that day. Behold, your reward will be great in. And I think that's one of the keys. There are two keys. There are two keys. That's one of them. I'll actually get back to that one. But woe to you who are rich. You've received your consolation. Woe to you who are filled now, for you will be hungry. Now, on the one hand, we would say, well, what's wrong with being rich? That's not evil. Correct. It's not evil. Money is not bad. The love of money is the root of all evil, but money is not. So what's going on here? How do we understand these? I don't really think we can read one verse in the Bible and understand it unless we know the whole Bible. It won't make sense, I don't think. And maybe there's like one or two verses that are that way, but they're unique, I think. I'm thinking of like John 3:16. It's one of the ones that interprets the whole thing. But the woe to you who are rich. I think woe to you who are filled now. Woe to you who are laughing and when all speak well of you. Having a good reputation is not necessarily an evil thing. Actually, it's a good thing. But if everyone likes you, red flag. Like, that's a red flag. That's a concern. If you're concerned about everyone liking you, also a red flag, right? So What's going on here? How do we understand these? Is it evil to have money? No, no. But I think to understand this, Mother Teresa said it best. She said, God cannot fill what is already full. God cannot fill what is already full. So if everything in this world is everything that I'm totally, totally invested in and totally into, my reputation, my bank account, my, you know, all of whatever it is, if that's everything to me and I'm filled with that and filled with myself and my own sense of myself, whatever, I'm actually not able to receive. I don't need anything from God. So is it wrong to have possessions? No, but it is wrong to be filled with them. And they're not a blessing if they don't, if they dull my hunger for God and for righteousness and for God's kingdom. They're actually, they become a curse if they dull that desire in my heart for God. And you might say, well, why such a difference in the Old Testament and the New Testament, you know? Why is in the Old Testament God saying, if you obey these commands, you're just going to be so prosperous? And in the New Testament, Jesus is saying, actually, blessed are you when you're poor, because you know that God is your only hope and that he's all that you have. And that actually you're going to be happier. And I've seen the reality of this many times in Honduras, which is the poorest place I've ever seen, you know, in personally. And I've seen some of the most joyful people. This is partly why. God is everything to them. Everything to them. And why does it sound so different from Old to New Testament? Is God different? He is not. But if you think about God's people being different, in some sense we're not, because human nature never changes. Read about all the sins that were happening 2,000 years ago in the Bible and look at our culture, and you can recognize all of them. You can go even further back to all the ancient world, and you can see all the, in the ancient world, all the transgenderism stuff, it was all there. That's another homily. It's about this worship of this goddess Ishtar, but that doesn't matter. The point is, our human nature doesn't change, but what does? Our understanding of God, and as his people, first the people of Israel, now the church, do we have a fuller revelation of God than we did when the book of Genesis was written? Yes, we do. And if God is a father to us, I know, well, you who are parents, the way that you reward your two-year-old and the way that you reward your 17-year-old, I hope those are a little bit different, right? They're not the same. It doesn't look the same. And when they're 21 and when they're 22, you know, reward might even sound like a weird word. Well, I don't have to reward my 21-year-old for being good or doing good. There is a difference in what the Lord wants us. So what does the Lord want us to understand by blessing us and giving us so many good things? A roof over your head, you know, food, to know his goodness, like, and to know that he provides for us. But what does he want us to know here in this gospel? And you already said it. It's that our hearts are supposed to be looking for a reward in heaven. That's what he wants us to desire. That's what he wants us to look for. That's what he wants us to hunger for him, for communion with him. And that's ultimately the greatest reward that we could have. It's ultimately not about having a comfortable, easy, nice life here on earth. And indeed, it's really not about that. In fact, it's about making sacrifices here because of the eternal good of myself, my kids, my friends, for someone else. And actually, you know, especially this one, blessed are you when people hate you and insult you and denounce your name as evil on account of the Son of Man. Rejoice and leap for joy on that day. You know, when you get to heaven, you're not going to say, oh, I wish my life had been so much easier and God had made it easier. You won't look at the hardships in your life and say, those were too hard for this. You know, those weren't worth it. That's never what we're going to say. For this, I was thinking about this, and I asked people last night, no one knew this. Does anyone know about the St. Crispin's Day speech? Raise your hand if you know about the St. Crispin's. Oh, okay, all right. Oh, okay. Well, you're going to, since everyone in your family just raised your hands, you're probably going to be able to critique my summary of this. So the St. Crispin's Day speech, this is where we get that line, we few, we happy few, we band of brothers, okay? Some people have watched the Band of Brothers series. And so most of the St. Crispin's Day speech is totally lost on me. Sorry. I don't know. It's before the Battle of Agincourt. All these English are going to go up. They're totally outnumbered by the French, okay? Is it Henry V giving this speech? Okay, good. People who actually know what's going on. All right, so he's giving this speech, and he's telling his countrymen, look, we're going up today or tomorrow. We're going up against the French. We're outnumbered. Probably a lot of us are going to die. But if you live, the last few lines of the speech are the part that that resonate with me. If you do live, every time this day comes up in the calendar, every time St. Crispin's Day comes up, you're going to remember what happened on this day. You're going to like pull up your sleeve and show your scars. You're going to remember what you did. You're going to remember some of your fallen comrades, yes, but you're going to remember with honor and with maybe you might say pride or some kind of sense of, there's a sense of joy or in that you showed up to the fight. And if you don't fight with us tomorrow in this battle against the French, every time this day comes up on the calendar, you are going to, I don't think you're going to remember with any great joy. That's just going to be a bitter memory about how you didn't show up. And anyone who wasn't here with us, and one line is they will hold their manhood cheap, not worth much, because they weren't here at this battle. I think, and that's why that line, that's why he says, we few, we happy few, we band of brothers, because there's this joy that they have because they showed up to the battle, put their whole life on the line, and, you know, as history, you know, they actually won that battle. But that wasn't even the important thing. I really think that when we see our lives at the end, when we get to heaven, some of the hardest things that will have happened in our lives, some of the hardest trials, will not be a cause for sadness. They will be a cause for great joy. Like, remember how hard that was, and we still got through it. You might say to the Lord, man, that was a really hard test I had to go through for many years. But I'm so glad that I trusted in your goodness and I didn't throw up my hands and quit on you. I didn't leave you. I didn't stop believing in you because it was hard. I didn't stop believing you because this bad thing happened. I'm so glad that I trusted you through all of it. And I'm so glad I made these sacrifices to follow you, to love others. That hunger for a reward in heaven is what the Lord here is saying. I want you to think about this. And this is really, I think it's going to be one of the greatest joys of heaven is how hard your life is right now. And if you maybe, it's possible that for some of you here, you are right now in the hardest part of your life. And that what the difficulty you're going through now is the hardest thing you will go through. And I think that's really good news. And I think that it's leading to a weight of glory beyond comparison. Well, I don't think that. I know that because that's from the Bible. This momentary light affliction is producing for you an eternal weight of glory. Blessed are you who are hungering for righteousness, hungering for God's kingdom, for communion with God. Blessed are you when people hate you on account of me, Jesus says. You know, you're going to have a greater reward. A lot of the times we shy away from this. I know I do, but then again, I don't get hated very much for Jesus because you don't give me a lot of insults for the sake of the gospel. So I have to go street preaching on a college campus for people to And blessed are you who are poor, who are weeping now, who are going through it. Blessed are you who are hungry, because you're going to be filled. So God cannot fill what is already full. Is it wrong to have possessions? No, but it's wrong to be filled with them. And God wants you, he wants to bless you beyond measure. Your obedience to him will bring, he wants to bless you for that. But he wants you to anticipate a heavenly blessing. When we understand those two things, that God cannot fill what is already full, that he wants us to look to this heavenly blessing, then we're going to know what he means, and we're going to be able to live this and to say, Lord, I want you to be everything for me. I want to be emptied of this world so that I can be filled with you.